Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Director of Strategic Initiatives, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Welcome, everyone, to Practical Significance. I'm Donna, and I'm here with my colleague, Ron, and we have two wonderful guests, Claire and Nicole, and we are going to talk about being a program chair for an ASA meeting or event. But before we jump into the topic of the day, I'm going to ask Claire and Nicole to introduce themselves. So, Claire, I'll start with you. Tell us a little bit about what you do in your day job.
Hi, everyone. I am Claire McKay-Bowen, and I'm the lead data scientist for privacy and data security at the Urban Institute. And for those who don't know what Urban is, it's a nonprofit public policy research institution. We cover a lot of different public policy topics. I think that includes tax policy, health policy, justice policy, and so on and so forth. We've existed for over 50 years, which is really amazing. We do really great, impactful public policy work. So that doesn't quite answer what I do. I work on a lot of cool projects to try to expand access to invaluable confidential data for research purposes.
Great. And I know we'll learn more about how Claire spends her volunteer time as we go throughout the podcast. So now, Nicole, over to you. Tell us about what you do in your day job.
Hi, my name is Nicole Lazar, and not nearly as interesting as Claire, I guess. I'm a professor of statistics at Penn State University. I moved there last summer during the pandemic. So I do what professors do. I teach classes, and I do research, and I advise students, and I do work for ASA and other organizations.
I'm fortunate to be able to collaborate with Claire and Nicole and on a variety of projects, and including those related to the Caucus for Women in Statistics. And so we'll give CWS a shout out because they're celebrating their 50th anniversary. So if you haven't checked out some of the events for the 50th anniversary, you definitely want to do that. So, Nicole, I just cannot imagine what the JSM program chair job encompasses, but I do imagine that it goes through phases. And so I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about what the last year or more has looked like for you as the JSM 2021 program chair.
Sure. So the work actually started last spring. As 2021 program chair, I was in charge of scheduling the JSM 2020 roundtables, the breakfasts and lunch roundtables. That happened last spring, so February-ish 2020. And then when JSM last year moved online, I had to reschedule the whole thing. So I don't know if people remember, but JSM last year was shortened a little bit because of the pandemic and moving to the online format. And so that did affect the scheduling of the roundtables as well. So they weren't spread over as many days, and some of that had to get shifted around. So that's sort of seen as like practice for the main event. And then during this past year, the work has sort of followed the calls for papers that you would have seen in AmStat News. So we start with the invited sessions, and then move on to the topic contributed and contributed. And along the way, there's sort of stuff in the background as well, having to do with the introductory overview lectures. So figuring out who we're going to invite for those and sending out those invitations, late breaking sessions sort of later in the scheme, and then also the public lecture. So all of that is sort of happening. But whenever you saw a call for a particular type of session coming out in AmStat News, that was the thing that we were working on at that time.
All I can say is wow. But Claire, I'm going to switch over to you and actually switch conferences, because I know that SDSS 2021 has just concluded, but that in a couple of weeks, you will convene the SDSS 22 program committee. And so I wonder if you could share a little bit about what you're most excited about.
It's kind of a whirlwind considering that we just, as you said, wrapped up SDSS 2021. I was the vice chair, and that meant I'd be chairing the SDSS 2022. And so I'm excited to see what my committee will come together on. They want to focus for the conference, what things they want to change. For those who don't know, SDSS is a fairly new conference. It, I believe, started in 2018. Each year, it seems to evolve more and more being shaped by the community and figuring out what is needed to kind of bring together statistics and data science. And that was one of the focuses I had for this committee, was trying to bring together a very diverse committee in terms of gender and background, but then also looking at those who come from industry, who are in computer science or so on and so forth. And so I brought a few of my colleagues from computer science in particular, because we wanted to bridge a bit between statistics and computer science with data science.
Thanks, Claire, and thanks, Nicole. Being program chair is a fascinating and complex job, and we're really grateful for your leadership. Nicole, I wanted to ask you, as someone who has attended a lot of JSMs, but now you're attending JSM in the capacity as program chair, has there been anything about JSM or anything else from being program chair that you've learned that was surprising to you?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I have gone to a lot of JSMs over the years. And during the time that I've been going, it's definitely grown a lot. And I think one of the things that surprised me, although it probably maybe shouldn't have surprised me quite as much as it did, was just how many moving parts there are and how many people are involved in putting the program together. We've got all the program chairs from the sections, but then also representatives from the various organizations. And we all, you know, everyone works together to try to create this great program that everyone will be able to enjoy. And it's really challenging because there are so many moving parts. And so all the multiple sessions that go on at one time and so on. So I think, just the complexity of it all, I think was something that I was not really aware of before I got involved in the process itself.
And it is interesting, too, how we really aren't ever not planning for JSM. There's always another JSM that's already in the works as this one's being planned for. And so the wheel just never stops turning, does it?
Yeah. And that was the other thing. Like, JSM, as you say, the JSM is in August, and then already in September is, the call for the next invited sessions are already coming out. So it really does not stop. And I think that was also something that, I hadn't really thought about before, because, you always see the things coming out in Amstat News, but it somehow doesn't penetrate that, oh, wait, this is actually happening all the time and people are always working on this.
Thanks, Nicole. And Claire, as you indicated, you barely had time to catch your breath from the SDSS 2021 before you had to start working on 2022. So I wanted to ask, are there opportunities for folks to get involved in that SDSS 2022 that's coming up?
So we're still trying to figure out how we're going to be shaping SDS 2022. I know there will be opportunities, but I don't know the specific ones. That's why I'm really excited to hear what my committee is going to come up with, because as with each SDSS, there has been something new or something that's been altered to, again, shape it to how the community wants to see or envision with this conference. And so to give an example, in 2020 was the first time we did kind of this abstract or extended abstract review, where you could do like a mini paper, and then there is a journal connected to the conference. And so that was to kind of encourage more of the style of what we see in computer science, where they value more of the conference proceedings. And so it was kind of our hybrid approach to that. And so with that kind of change, we needed more reviewers. So I do see that becoming more and more prominent in future SDSSs. And so that's like one way I can see people to get involved. Another one is that perhaps there could be a new event. There was some chat for 2022 in particular, when it was going to be in person, to do like fireside chats or like birds of a feather, some way to like bring people together on certain kind of topics, all required to be in person. And so they didn't happen in 2020. So I'm going to bring those up for the convening for 2022 and seeing if that's something that people want to pursue. And if that's the case, those are other opportunities to volunteer and try to help expand SDSS.
So that's great. And one of the things that your response reminds me of is that one of the advantages of a meeting the size of SDSS is that you can be flexible. You can turn the ship to a different direction year by year as you see what the field needs to do. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah, Claire, and I'm guessing that you won't mind if we include a link to the SDSS 2022 website in the show notes, and maybe even give a shout out to folks to reach out to you or me and share their ideas for things that might take place at SDSS 2022.
Yeah, Donna, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say that it'd be kind of great if we could showcase SDSS 2022 and that people can email me. I'm pretty responsive.
responsive and friendly. So Nicole and Claire, I am a big reader of productivity advice, not necessarily a big follower of productivity advice, but I'm always on the lookout for tips and tricks. And so I wonder if you can share with me tips that you've developed as program chairs for staying organized. And Nicole, I'll start with you.
Well, I really have to give a shout out to ASA meeting staff, in particular Naomi and Kathleen, who helped keep me organized by sending email reminders of this is what we need to do now and this is the process. Because again, until you're actually in it, it's sort of hard to know how things roll out. So that was really helpful for me. Also just doing things as they come up. So, you know, I think we're all so busy, there's kind of a tendency to deal with the most pressing thing first. And often that is the JSM planning, but it wasn't always in this past year for me. And so I would always just, okay, something comes from Naomi or something comes from Kathleen, I'm going to take care of it right away and not let it sit. There's a lot of just organization in terms of the scheduling as well. And so I have, I take lots of notes and keep track of what I've done, what I haven't done, and just try to keep things rolling and not let anything sit.
Okay, so I have to ask, because folks who know me know that I have an office supply fetish, right? So digital notes or analog notes?
Both? For JSM, mostly analog notes, actually. And I did have some digital. So if you were to poke around in my computer, you might find little notes about the introductory overview lectures or these sessions or those sessions, but a mix for me.
Cool. And Claire, what are your tips and tricks?
Oh, goodness. So for those who know me, I am a organization freak. I'm not sure if that's the right phrasing, but I hyper-organize everything. And so, of course, echoing what Nicole said, it's great having the amazing ASA staff to keep me on track as well. But I have multiple ways of keeping track of my projects or volunteer work. So if you ever do a Zoom chat with me, you can see that my office, I have a blackboard and a whiteboard, and they each have different purposes. I have two different calendars that track between my work and my volunteer stuff with notifications to remind me that, like, you need to do this activity or send a reminder for this. If it's not on my calendar, it gets lost. So this is also why it's nice to have other people to keep track. And to echo Nicole, I've been handwriting notes for years. I think this is a habit I picked up when I was in physics. Actually, I was in a lab. I was mostly doing experimental physics for a long time. And so you're supposed to keep track daily what you do with each experiment. And so that kind of carried over into what I do daily on kind of keep like a mini research journal, basically seeing what I do each day. And so this kind of is the same thing I do with my volunteer work. But then I realized that it got a little cumbersome trying to like save all these. I basically have a stack of these notebooks. And so I finally invested in a writing tablet where it's just for writing. There's no interface to be like a mini computer. It's just for writing. So that way I can save my notes as a PDF and then kind of store them digitally so that I can track what was going on for certain events. I think Donna has experienced that when I was taking notes for one of our webinars for the Committee on Career Development, and I sent her my PDF of notes. So it might have been a little too much, but that's how I keep myself on schedule and not trying to drop any balls that are being thrown in the air.
Well, note-taking is a good habit. I can tell you, you know, sort of in the fair warning department, that when you get to be my age, you need notes so that you can just remember what you're supposed to do and when you're supposed to do it. And I'm not talking about JSM, I'm just talking about ordinary activity. So I'll have to check my notes here to find out what I'm supposed to do next after this podcast. But I have had the opportunity to talk to a lot of program chairs over the years, and it seems like it's a particularly unique role in terms of the opportunity to see the breadth of the field, to have a real view. I think it's kind of similar to being a journal editor, which I know that Nicole has done. Claire, you may have done some of that sort of thing as well, but you get this big picture about how broad our field really is. So I'm going to ask this of each of you, starting with Claire, but from that high-level perspective that you're seeing, what has surprised you as you have served in your program chair role?
Goodness, that's a really good question. And it's basically saying what you've said earlier, that you get a really good overview of the diverse perspectives and just how amazing statistics is. That sounds really cliche, but it's one of the things that drew me to the field. I mentioned earlier, I started in physics and I switched over to stats because I just kind of Tukey's famous saying was I wanted to be in other people's backyards because I just thought all the science was cool. And so the way for me to do that is do statistics. And even though that's what I thought years ago, it's being re-emphasized with being a program chair because you just see all the different things that people are doing. You talk to your committee members and hear what they are doing as well in terms of not just research, but volunteer activities and like what ways they can and are doing to help the profession. And it's just really humbling, I guess, is another way to think about it too. I'm just amazed about what everyone's doing.
Thanks, Claire. What about you, Nicole?
Well, Claire, you actually nailed it. I agree completely with what you've said. I mean, I also thought about the question. Just seeing all of the different things that people are working on, and JSM is so broad. I mean, there's a little bit of everything. Every application that you might think about, every type of method you might think about, there's representation in JSM for that. And so, yeah, just like Claire said, I mean, just seeing all of that up front and realizing all the different things that people are working on, because we all get caught up, and I know that's true for me as well, in our own particular areas of application and our own types of methods that we're familiar with. But there's a whole other world out there that we don't always see. And as program chair, it's just been a privilege to get to see that and just to see all the wonderful things that our colleagues are working on.
Thanks to you both. It is actually, I love that phrasing, that it is humbling to recognize how incredible our colleagues are. So I want to do a little bit of retrospective, look back on our virtual events, and of course, JSM 2021 will be virtual, and ask both of you if you think there are things we've learned from our virtual meetings that will be useful when we are hopefully back in person. And Claire, I'll start with you.
This was also something I was thinking about because I really miss in-person meetings. I miss meeting people. And I think one of the things that I learned from the virtual meetings is how important it is to be connected. And the virtual meetings have been nice because you can stay connected in a way where we thought that with the pandemic, we couldn't have conferences at all. But with SDSS 20 and 2021, we had people from Europe and people who said that normally I could only go to one conference, especially because they had family obligations, but then they were able to attend multiple. And so hearing that perspective, as somebody who was a little selfish thinking, oh man, I really miss in-person meetings. But then hearing that from other people, I guess echoing back to like getting other people's perspectives, realizing like, wow, this is the really cool part about virtual meetings is that we can still stay connected and be more accessible for those who cannot attend otherwise. And so I think that's something to be looking forward to in for future conferences. I think that will shape how we think about maybe doing hybrid or at least trying to increase accessibility for those who can normally not attend a multiple in person or just couldn't attend at all.
Yeah, thanks, Claire. I think that the accessibility concern is really important. So I'm glad that we are all thinking about it. Nicole, what's your thinking about what we've learned from virtual events and how that might play forward?
So one of the things that is often frustrating, I guess, about JSM is that there's so much going on at one time, you know, all this parallel sessions. And, you know, I'm sure others have had the same experience as I have, that there'll be multiple talks going on at the same time that I really, really wanted to go to. And with the virtual format, it's been possible because these often are recorded and they're available for people who have registered at least for some time. And so you can go back and listen to some of those talks that you weren't able to get to in person. I don't know how that's going to play out when we do go back to the in-person meetings, which like Claire, I definitely miss more than I thought I would. But that may be something that we can think about. And again, it's maybe an issue also of accessibility, but a different type just because of the size of JSM and similar meetings. How do we give people the opportunity to experience it more fully than they might have been able to?
Thank you, Claire and Nicole. I want to switch gears here a little bit. The ASA runs on volunteers like you. We have a relatively small staff compared to the size of the association, and most of the work that gets done is done by volunteers. You've both cited the wonderful JSM meeting staff, and they really do carry big load, and they carry it very professionally, but without lots and lots of volunteers, there's no JSM or SDSS or many other things that the ASA does. The particular roles that you have volunteered for here are really large ones. And so we want to ask, what inspires you to take on these roles of such magnitude? Let's start with you, Nicole.
Well, my husband would say that I have a problem saying no. that's just sort of a joke. I've gotten a lot out of my own ASA membership, just in terms of getting to meet wonderful people and interact with wonderful people. I've been, as you said, to a lot of JSMs and gotten to experience that as well. And so for me, a lot of it is giving back to the community, but then also the opportunity to just be involved in something that's so important to the profession and, get to have a role, maybe in shaping it is probably too strong of a word for what the program chair does, but just having that input and getting that high level view of where the profession is going and what things people are interested in and just seeing all that. It's just very exciting for me. And then, the everyone that I've interacted with has just been of the same mind. It's like, how do we make this the best conference that we can in general under these particular circumstances? This year, we had planned for an in-person conference, but always with the thinking in the back of our minds that it may end up being hybrid or it may end up going all virtual, which is indeed what happened. And in spite of the disappointment that I know people have felt, everyone pulled together and made sure that it happened and is going to happen. And so for me, just seeing all of that is really great.
Thanks, Nicole. Claire, what's your perspective on this?
Well, I have the same problem as Nicole, which is I can't say no. And then I try to restrict the kind of volunteer work I do. But then some people know my weaknesses, such as if it involves students or kids, I can't seem to say no. So that's a problem. But that's something I have to tackle on my own, at least for conferences. So when I was thinking about why I get involved in undertaking something like being program chair for a conference, I look back to my first time attending a statistics conference. So again, I switched from physics. And so it was kind of overwhelming and a bit intimidating for me to come into a brand new field as a graduate student. And actually, the very first conference I attended hosted by the ASA was the Women in Statistics Conference. And this was back in 2014, where it was just called the Women in Statistics Conference. It was the very first one. And it was so welcoming. I just couldn't believe how nice everybody was. Not to say that since then, I've learned that the profession is very, very kind. And it was just having that kind of community and that opportunity to go to that kind of conference. And this is actually where I met my postdoc advisor. So it was interesting because they hosted a speed mentoring session. I attended it and I met my postdoc advisor. She's Joanne Wendelberger at Los Alamos National Laboratory. And I did internship because of that. She also did a great talk at my Women in Science group at my graduate program. That all happened because I attended this Women in Statistics conference. And I also, when I attended my very first JSM, I signed up through another mentoring program through the conference. And that's how I met Sastry. And he was paired up with me. And at the expo, he had me shake a bunch of people's hands that I don't remember. This is all what was a whirlwind, but he's like, these are all ASA presidents and I want you to meet all of them. And so there was that moment. And I also, because he said, you should go to this mentoring panel I'm part of. And I did. And that's how I met Jerry Monroe. She's been a longtime mentor as well. And so I've stayed connected with her ever since then, actually. And to the point that we actually meet up for dinner at conferences, because we found out that our hidden passion of being like secretly wanting to be foodies. And so JSM Denver, we went to a restaurant together and it was a lot of fun. So telling you all these little stories, because these wouldn't happen if it weren't for these kind of conferences to make these personal lifelong connections that make a big impact on my career. And so I see doing this volunteer work as to help other people make those kind of connections that made such big impact on me, and hoping that they'll make an impact on those who attend the conferences.
Thank you both for these responses. Neither Donna nor I are the right people to counsel you on how to say no to things that you're invited to do. But I think both of us would echo the experiences that you've had, that the benefits that I've received in my life and my career from saying yes to things have been so much greater than the very few times where I thought to myself, nah, I probably shouldn't have volunteered for this particular thing. So again, thank you for your leadership roles in the ASA.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I'm happy to become a member of the Help Claire and Nicole Say No Committee, as long as it's not to Donna and Ron. But, you know, we can talk about that offline. So I want to thank both Claire and Nicole for joining us, and of course, all the folks who are listening. And I want to remind you to join us for JSM. Registration is still open, and you can check out the online program, and you will see that Nicole and her team have indeed put together a spectacular program. And there might even be a surprise practical significance event at JSM. So, you know, register to find out what that might be. And now, as tradition holds, I will turn it over to Ron for the top 10.
Thank you, Donna. And as we've discussed during this podcast, we're virtual for JSM this year, but soon we will be meeting in person again. JSM sites are scheduled several years in advance. And so today, the Practical Significance podcast pulls back the curtain a little bit so you can see some of the JSM decision-making process. And to do that, I bring to you today top 10 unlikely locations for a future JSM. Here are some places we probably won't be meeting anytime soon. Number 10, Three Mile Island. Number 9, Atlantis. Number 8, near that volcano in Iceland that I still can't pronounce. Number 7, the Lompoc Federal Correctional Facility. Probably won't be meeting there anytime soon. Number 6, Cocker City, Kansas, even though the world's largest ball of twine is a great attraction. Number 5, the Bermuda Triangle. Number 4, we probably won't be meeting in Paris, Illinois. Or number 3, not meeting in Hell, Michigan. Number 2, Six Flags over Chernobyl. And the number 1 unlikely location for JSM, Las Vegas, Nevada. Well, that's it for Practical Significance for August. We look forward to JSM just a few days away and to the September episode of this podcast. Thank you, as always, for joining us on Practical Significance.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AmpStat News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.